Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Somewhere in Vegas here on blogtalkradio.com. I'm Mark VQ. I'm your host. I'm very privileged to have a couple guests today coming up in about another half an hour. Christina Dina will be calling us, talking about her a new song and her new album coming up. But first up, we got a really exciting act. Remember her from the Devil's Arithmetic, which got a lot of critical acclaim when it came out. Probably 15, 20 years ago. But it's been great to be able to see so many actresses out of that do so well. One of them being in particular our guest at this time, Shelley Scanander. You just told me this, I'm butchering it again.
No one can pronounce my name. Scandrani.
Scandrani.
It's Egyptian.
Yeah.
Scandrani.
Scandrani.
It's Egyptian.
That's right.
I always
Scandrani.
Say, like,
okay, got it.
Right. When I first moved to Los Angeles, people said that I should change my name and kind of make it more American. And my answer to that was always, if they could figure out Schwarzenegger, they'll figure out Scandrani.
Yeah, I think I got it now. It's Scan and then draw, then knee. That's easy to know.
Yeah.
But anyway, you were telling me just before we were coming on air that you're kind of recovering from last night, obviously. How was your Oscar night? Do anything interesting at all?
It was great. I went to the Roger Neal Oscar viewing party. You know, they have like a big red carpet and gifting suite. And then, you know, they have the dinner with the screening. A lot of, you know, beautiful people, a lot of actors. So, yeah, it was really great. It was great. And a lot of this year, a lot of my friends were at the same party. So we had a good time. It's always nice to dress up and... It's funny when you haven't seen somebody you've worked with in a while, and then you literally just meet them on the red carpet, and you're like, "Hey, let's take pictures." So it was a good night. It was exciting. I love watching the Oscars, and all of the people that I predicted would win, all the actors that I predicted won. So.
Yeah, you know, I was pulling for certain people too. That I kind of had a feeling Goldman was going to win. McDormand, as much as she was my second choice, I'm blanking on her name. The gal from Shape of Water, I thought should have won personally.
Okay.
You know, being able to act without having to speak a word is something, you know. So,
no, it is. It is. You're right.
But Shape of Water did win Best Picture, which was absolutely, was absolutely fabulous. I've seen, I guess, most of the Best Picture nominees with the exception of two. I didn't see Phantom Thread and I didn't see, Call Me By My Name. All the rest I did. So it was...
Okay, I saw them both, and they're great. They're definitely worth watching. The reason why I chose Frances is there was a specific scene in the film where a priest comes to her house and starts telling her how she should and shouldn't behave, and she just tears him down. That when I watched it, I actually watched it on a screener at home. And when I watched it, I saw that scene, I stopped, rewound, and watched it again. And I've never done that with a screener. I've never, like, stopped a movie in the middle and had to see the scene again. But it was so good that I had to see it again that moment. So that's why, for me, that's why I wanted her to win.
non-spoiler alert, I really hope you make a sequel to this because they did leave it open-ended at the end. So
They did.
So, yeah. So I'm really hoping that they decide to make a sequel of this, and I hope that the Coens actually do it. I don't think they've ever really done any sequels for any of their work, but this would be a time where I could really see that they could do a really good sequel to the movie. But a lot of them were really good last night as well. So it was great to be able to see that as well. Any moments that you particularly like last night during this broadcast?
I loved her speech. I thought it was great. I loved the way she put the Oscar down and was like, let's have some perspective. This is a statue and we are people. And then, you know, got everybody to stand up. I thought that was great. The opening speech was hilarious with the Oscar, you know, when he was saying, like, he puts his hands where it's meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know if I can repeat everything he said on the show because he was kind of dirty about stuff. But the opening speech was fantastic. I really enjoyed watching all the songs, because, you know, especially, which is interesting actually, the song from The Greatest Showman, This Is Me. So I saw the film, and it's a great film, and the song is great in the film, but seeing it, there's something about, you know, when we see it in the film and they're all like circus people, and obviously it's a metaphor of how we're all kind of different and weird and strange in our own way, but seeing it on the stage performed by regular people, all of which are different races, genders, colors, ages, and saying this is me, it was actually even more powerful for me to see it on that stage than for me to see it in the film. So I kind of re-understood the song on a different, deeper level. So that I really enjoyed watching that.
Yeah, and there's two big themes that I want to talk to you about that really directly concern you. The first one is the fact you were talking about it, the idea of diversity. We're seeing a lot of foreign filmmakers that have immigrated here to the United States did very well last night. You know, quite a few from Latin American countries. You know, obviously Guillermo del Toro is, I believe, from Mexico. As well, and then they talk a lot about that all night, the idea of being a very diverse culture in terms of that as well. I mean, what's your thoughts on that? I mean, you're originally from Israel, and which
right.
has a really great scene, by the way. I've seen, you know, for years we've been seeing Israel have some best foreign language film nominations. We haven't seen them as much lately. It's kind of surprising, but kind of tell a little bit about, you know, about the idea of diversity and how you're seeing that going on in Hollywood right now.
Well, interestingly enough, when I first got here, there weren't any Israeli roles at all. At all. So that was jarring. I mean, luckily, you know, I grew up in London, so I could also play like the British roles, which is great. But there weren't any Israeli roles at all. And now there's more and more of them. And I think people like Ayelet Zorer and Gal Gadot are really kind of opening the stage, and I just want to give them a shout out and thank them for that, because they're really opening the stage. I mean, Gal Gadot is like on fire right now, and she's fantastic, and why not? And even now they did Transparent season 4, they actually go to Israel, and so it was really funny, all of my friends, I would just see them at the auditions, because it was like an Israeli party, finally, like there's a role for us. And I was actually in Transparent. I had a co-star recurring role in episode 3 and 4. And I mean, that wouldn't have been, like, that nobody wanted. And also a lot of times, like if there was a Mossad agent, they wouldn't get an Israeli to act in it. They'd get somebody else to pretend to be Israeli, which is, you know, it's okay, it happens, but I'm just saying, like, why not open the stage up for... Look, I mean, the thing is that America, there's a certain responsibility that we have to take on when we're here, because we are the largest film industry in the world, and we are the main kind of platform, and so there has to be a representation of the rest of the world. It can't be that every sci-fi movie happens to be in America. It can't be that every time aliens land, they land in America. You know, it can't be that every story is from America. And I think now people are more interested in hearing about other stories. I think things like Facebook and Instagram have really opened up the stage, and everybody wants to know what's going on elsewhere. And I think it's a great time, and I'm excited to be here during that time, because I feel like more people are interested in my voice. So it's great.
Yeah, and interesting, you know, really the aliens always target the landmarks. They never, you know, target where probably the best part of the city is. They always torch up the landmarks, which isn't really, you know, really, really practical. But
I remember Independence Day.
Yeah.
I think it was Independence Day. They had a scene where they were showing different parts of the world where the aliens were going. And then there was like one 3-second scene where there was like a flag of Israel, and everybody in the audience cheered because finally Israel was in one of the American movies.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that came across last night is the idea of, and this comes from Frances's comments during her speech, is that she wants more people to invest in women's projects, because a lot of the actresses, a lot of people that were standing in the audience do have projects that they want to do. And I know you're involved with a couple of projects of your own as well. So, you know, what is that? First of all, what does that mean to you for Frances to say, you know, let's invest in some of these men who do have really serious projects? And tell me a little bit of some of the projects that you're doing actually too. So I know you're actively doing other projects as well.
Right. Well, I think like a couple of years ago, a producer said to me, you know, I'm going to write a script. I'd love to have you be one of the leads. But of course we have to write the main lead as the male, because you can't get a script funded with a female lead. And I was like, oh, well, that's great.
And Jimmy Kimmel said, then came March, or somebody said last night, then came March of last year.
Right. Yeah, he was like, yeah, I remember a time, yeah, that was March last year. But yeah. I think now, since the whole hashtag MeToo and hashtag Time's Up, and I say hashtag because it's not just the movement, it's the fact that it's a hashtag and everybody can now follow it and be a part of it, whether you're in the industry or not. So it's almost like every time you hashtag something, it's like you're actually voting. You know what I'm saying? You're becoming one of the people that are agreeing with this, and it's almost like your voice is being heard. But I think now things have opened up, and I have some projects coming up. So I have a film it's an indie. It's a feature film called Phoning It In. It's in development right now. It's set to shoot towards the end of this year, and I'm the lead. And that's exciting because I've always had to be kind of the lead's love interest, or, you know, and then it's always like this complicated situation where it's really hard to get the lead role as a woman. And now I think those things are changing and everything is opening up, and it's exciting. Phoning It In is actually a story about a woman who can't make any decisions. I can't say too much, obviously, because it's still in development. She can't make any decisions. So kind of her life is at a standstill because she's overwhelmed because of things that have happened in her life. And she gets some guidance and she starts on this journey of kind of growth and rediscovering herself, because she's an adult, but she hasn't gone on it's almost a coming of age story, but for a woman who's 30, you know, because she didn't come of age younger because she was too kind of jarred and couldn't make decisions. And I think that's a really interesting concept, because I think in today's day and age, we have everything is at our reach, you know, and everything is possible, but yet with so many options, we get really overwhelmed and it actually becomes like harder to make decisions or to move forward with things, because, you know, there's always something else that you could be doing and it's really hard to know which is the right thing to do. So I think it's actually a story that a lot of people are going to relate to.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to be able to see that, you know, and like I said, you know, it's changing. We're seeing a lot more, you know, a lot more female leads, you know. You know, I think Tomb Raider is coming out in a couple of weeks here as well. You know, it's just been interesting to see that kind of changeover as well, to see somebody be in a movie like that.
Don't they say that, aren't the statistics that 60% of moviegoers are women? So actually more moviegoers are women, and yet only 10% of the stories are about women. It's funny. I mean, I remember as a kid, I was always the cool girl that, you know, if I had a boyfriend, I was the cool girl that would go see, you know, the action stuff with him. And I was always kind of proud of being kind of like a tomboy girl that I'd go and see the sci-fi movies and the action movies because, you know, I didn't have to see a chick flick. And today I'm like, that's such social conditioning. Like, I love sci-fi, but why not be, you know, okay with watching the female movies too? You know, and we've all been socially conditioned, and hopefully now we're being socially conditioned in the other direction. I also have, like, an online show that's coming out. It's going to be called Black Sheep Revelations, which Natalie Marciano is producing. She's a great comedian, and we're going to be co-hosting it. And basically, it's going to be a talk show, and it's going to talk about everything that's happening in the world. So a lot of it is going to be issues of the day, you know, whatever's happening in the news at that moment. And then also we're going to talk about just general thoughts on society and how we view things, but in a really comical way. But the idea behind it is to kind of strengthen and empower and give people the right and the feeling that it's okay to be a black sheep, right? Because it's called Black Sheep Revelations. And it's okay to be different, and it's okay to, you know, walk your own walk. You don't have to, you know, everybody, constantly people, I think it's natural for people to try and pigeonhole you because people want to understand you as quickly as possible, right? When you meet somebody, you want to get who they are right away. You know, oftentimes people don't want to spend an hour, 3 hours, a week, months, years getting to know a person. They want to just know them right away. So we pigeonhole. And I think when you pigeonhole somebody, and you end up pigeonholing also yourself, you kind of want to fit into a specific box, especially like in America in high school, right? You have the geeks and you have the freaks and then you have the jocks and I don't know, all these things that you guys have here. And I think what we want to do with this is just allow people to kind of let themselves be who they are and embrace being the black sheep, being different, being unique. And that is the strength, because, I mean, we were all put on this planet for a reason. That's what I believe. And if we're not who we are, we can't fully fulfill the reason why we're here, because we're trying to be somebody else, you know? So that's a really exciting show that we're going to have.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. First of all, going back to your point about, you know, the idea of action flicks versus chick flicks or whatever, I think that barrier is starting to drop a little bit because I mean,
right.
As a guy, you know, I'll watch romantic comedies, you know, once in a while. Actually, my guilty pleasure is actually watching Hallmark Channel once in a while. But yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just, you know, I think that barrier is kind of going down too, where males are actually appreciative. I remember a story. My brother works in the oil industry, and he liked Pitch Perfect, and he was talking a little bit about it. And another you know, big honking guy that you wouldn't think would like, you know, a picture like that was actually a fan of it too. So
right.
I think that barrier is kind
and
of
also,
breaking down.
And also, I mean, with Wonder Woman and Black Panther, even if you don't like other genres, at least now you can see women in action films and superhero films.
I mean, I work very closely with the Artemis Film Festival. I've had a couple of my projects actually make it over there, and they're
cool.
Kind of, you know, spearheading that thing as well. I may have to maybe we'll get you over there. I think their festival is next month. I can't make it this year. I have a project that I'm in the middle of that I'm not going to be able to present until next year. But I'll have to hook you up with the guys over there. Maybe you'll be able to catch a couple action films over there if you have any time during that weekend. So I'll email you that information.
Awesome.
Yeah, and the other thing you're just mentioning is the idea about the diversity and the idea that you know, people are going to be different. And I think there was a time, you know, maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago where, yeah, you were pretty much pigeonholed when you were high school. You know, you didn't really know who you were. And, you know, a lot of times for me that advice, well, that was back then, you know, the advice was wait until college because there'll be a more diverse group that you're going to be able to be a part of as well.
Right.
But with social media now, I think we're getting to that point where we're seeing even people across the world that may, you know, that have similar interests or they have similar problems or think the similar way and all that as well. So I think that portion of it's really interesting as well. The fact that we're a global community now and there's people that are very similar to each other, even if they may not have grown up in the same area or even the same continent. So it's been very interesting times as of so.
And that's why, though, but that's why, because the social media has kind of reinvented the way people perceive, let's say, you know, I would say it probably started really exploding about 7-8 years ago. And those people were the people in high school. These people are now adults, and these people are helping to push through all the boundaries that maybe the generations before just kind of saw it as the status quo. Like, this is how it is. You know, if you look at movies, like back in the 50s and 40s, women in these movies were very feminine. They spoke in a quiet little girly voice. The lines that they, you know, the lines that they had, you know, like Reese Witherspoon was saying in a speech a couple of years ago, that they, that all the women in the movies say, "What do we do now?" And then she was saying, "Do you know any woman that in a time of crisis turns around to somebody else and says, 'What do we do now?'" No. She always goes right into action. She always starts working hard to find the solution. And yet all of these films had women saying, "What do we do now?" And so, I mean, I think that that's where it was. And I think that because what is happening in the social media kind of affected and changed people within their time in high school and college, that's why finally there's waves happening right now in the industry, in the world, hopefully. That's why, I think.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's an interesting time right now. We're just seeing a lot of social change going on and relatively quickly as well. I mean, every single year we hear something that's going to be that sparks change. So it's been an interesting, and I think it's going to continue over the next couple of years as well. I mean, it's great to be able to see that as well. And I'm interested to see how your show goes, and you know, what topics you guys discuss on there as well. I know. Actually, Israel's been a hot topic as of late in terms of what the U.S. has stated about Israel being its own country as it should be. It's kind of an interesting fact to say the least. So,
I don't think that our show is going to go into the politics of Israel. It's going to talk about topics that are just kind of global topics rather than go into specific politics of things, because I think the problem is that, honestly, this is how I view politics, is that you never really know the full story of anything. And once you start opening that kind of Pandora's box, everybody's going to have an opinion that might not be an educated opinion. And it doesn't matter how educated I am and how real and how much proof I have, because I've been there. And I've shown proof. There's just so much information and media information that people are getting regarding any political topic, not just Israel, but in general. I mean, I know people that, you know, during kind of the whole Trump versus Hillary fiasco, stopped talking to each other. Family members, brothers that stopped talking to each other because one wanted Trump and the other one wanted Hillary. I mean, it's harsh.
I see it on, you really see that, and that's the bad news about social media too. It's just that when you say your opinion, you know, if you're pro Hillary or pro Trump, or you're pro Trump and anti Trump. You know, there are people that are physically like, okay, I'm gonna stop following you. Yeah, there is a little uncomfortability there. And I kind of hate the fact that, you know, we can't just sit down and just discuss things. You know, it has to be, you know, it has to be that you're on this side or you're on that side. That goes back to the idea that, you know, being pigeonholed. I think that, you know, it's just crazy not to have that discussion. So I'm interested to see how that goes in terms of, you know, your new show as well. I mean, it's
got
to be a discussion.
We will post these videos, and we will encourage people to write comments, whether they're pro or against what we're saying. You know, because I think what we're saying, it's called Black Sheep Revelations. So what we're saying comes from our life experience and revelations and understandings that we've had over the years of living this life. So it doesn't matter what somebody says. It doesn't take away from my experience as a human being. So we're open to anybody commenting, so long as no one tries to kill us.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, that's the thing. You know, like I said, and you know, it's nice. I mean, I love those. I love shows that just, you know, will ink from somebody's experience, and you know, also, you know, stuff that they have learned over time, or what they've seen, they've observed, or whatever. You know, and then like I said, not everybody's gonna have all the answers, but you know, you're entitled to, you know, have your own educated guess or your own opinion as well. So it's great to be able to see someone like this go on. So I'm highly, really interested in seeing how this show goes as well. And think anything else that you want to promote or anything, other projects that you have coming up?
Well, I mean, I wish, but I'm tied up. I can't, I actually had to get like in writing the okay from both the producers on these projects to be able to talk about them. The other ones are like I still am under non-disclosure agreements. But I can talk about things that I've done. I mean, it's the way it is, you know, it's just, it is what it's like. People forget that show business is actually a business.
Yeah.
You know, they think it's all fun and games, but like, there's a lot of lawyers involved in everything you do.
yeah, exactly. You know, there are some things that, don't want to get out or anything. I perfectly understand that as well. You know, I absolutely understand that as well. But just to be, you know, I just wanted to make sure that we can get
I can talk about projects that are kind of in post. There's a film called 9 Ways to Hell, which is actually a horror anthology. And it's based on Dante's Inferno. Now, I don't really watch horror films because I'm a wuss and I get nightmares. I don't deal with them, but it was really funny to act in one. The producer's like, I have no idea how you're going to come to the screening, like, for the opening night, because you're going to be scared. So I'll have to deal with that. But what's interesting about it is I always try and do things and films that kind of meet with my integrity as a human rather than just, you know, my acting. And what I liked about this horror film is that it's based on Dante's Inferno, which speaks about the 9 levels of hell. That's why it's called 9 Ways to Hell. So, you know, there's this kind of, each segment has its own underlying message and moral and the way people should behave and the way world is perceived. So that's a really interesting project that's going to be coming out soon. It's almost finished. Like, they're doing last touches and color correction, things like that, and then it will, you know, be released. So that's really exciting. And then I also worked on a project called The Seagate, which actually is an anti-war film, and it's a short. And the reason why I talk about it is because they actually wrote it into a feature film, and I'm really hoping that that's going to get made because it's an anti-war film. But it's like really kind of, it basically talks about the kind of money machine that is war and how all these, we were just talking about politicians, that's why I'm bringing it up, but how, you know, you don't really know who's saying what for what reason. And, you know, the last time that we had probably a war that was a clear-cut war was probably the Second World War, where you had, like, the Nazis and the rest. And now it's like, you know, this government is going to war with this government, but because they're trying to get this land, and then this one has an oil deal, so they're supplying, you know, weapons to this country while they're fighting. Like, it's all this kind of political, you know, machine of money making, and that's what the film talks about, and it's kind of edgy, so we're really hoping. The short went to Cannes. I had the lead in that. And I'm really hoping that that's going to come to fruition soon, because it seems like the whole industry is changing, and maybe it won't be as difficult to get something so edgy out there. So that's a really interesting project that I'm hoping is going to come to life.
And were you at Cannes for the opening over there?
Yes, I did. I went to Cannes. It was a blast. I mean, it rained for the first 3 days, and also the year that I went, there just happened to be a strike at the airport where in Brussels, which is like where most people take the kind of connection flight. And we were told, like, you're not going to get your suitcases. So just put everything you can into your carry-on luggage. So here I am with, like, all my gowns, trying to fit as many gowns and as much – of, you know, shoes and makeup into this little carry-on thing, because I know that probably for the first 4 or 5 days I won't have clothes. But everybody was in the same boat, so it was kind of this ice-breaking conversation that everybody had. Like, if they saw you in the same shoes, they're like, oh, you flew in through Brussels, huh? And it was like, yep, I only have one pair until they give me my suitcase. So that was, it was, Canada's beautiful. Canada's beautiful.
Yeah,
and
yeah, one last question. Go ahead.
Yes.
One last question. Have you been over to Sundance at all?
A bunch of times to Sundance. Sundance is a blast. I love film festivals in general because I think it's an opportunity to meet people at their happiest, because filmmakers love films and now they're surrounded by them. I've been maybe 4 or 5 times. It's wonderful. And I love the snow and on the mountain, and you know, you meet a lot of actors, writers, directors. It's great for networking. Yeah, I've been
there once, and you know, I would love to go back at some point. So yeah, definitely. Just want to mention Galactic Revelations, I believe, has a Facebook page up, so you guys can check out.
But we kind of haven't launched anything, because we want to do like a proper launch with like a campaign. So everything's like being built up. So in May we're going to do the launch, and then in June the videos are going to be released. So it's like this whole process. So yes, it does have a Facebook page. It's just
so you guys can check out there for any updates, right?
Yes. And they will be coming very soon.
Okay. Any other social media at all, Shelley?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. I'm on IMDb. I have a website, ShelleyScandrani.com. I'm on Facebook. I'm everywhere.
Yeah. You know, once you get the show going, we'll have to get you back on and promote it a little bit. But absolute pleasure to be able to talk about a lot of stuff. We could go on another half an hour, but I got my other guest on the line here. So, Shelley, you know, great to have been able to talk to you, and definitely we'll have to talk in the next couple months once the show launches.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I had a blast. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no problem at all, Shelley. Best to you for the rest of the year. And, I really look forward to some of these projects that you have coming up.
Thank you. Have a good week. Bye, guys.
You too. Bye. Shelley Scandrani. I said it right. You guys can check her out. Shelley Scandrani. That's combat. Shelley with SKANDRINI. You guys can check her website out. Also, Black Sheep Revelations on Facebook. You guys can check that out as well. My next guest is on the line. She's a Christian R&B singer and songwriter. Really Philly-based, really great gal. She comes from a very interesting choir background. Has toured all the way around the world. She has her new single out, If God Doesn't Want. Her new album is coming out this coming week. I'd like to welcome Christina Deanna, I believe. Is that correct? Am I pronouncing that correct, Christina?
It's the nay, but it's not your fault. The accents aren't supposed to help. My grandpa and my dad are Dean, so we just put an A on it when I became a girl. So it's Danae,
gotcha. How's everything going in Philly?
Say it again?
How's everything going out in Philly?
Well, it's cold. It's a really cold. It's actually in a little deceiving time of year where it looks really sunny, but you should really stay inside.
I know they were having some problems up east with the cold, and they were having some issues up there. I think it's further north of you, though, more towards probably New York and New Jersey more than anything else. But I mean, it's weird. I mean, we're getting into March and we're still coming. We're supposed to be getting into spring and it's still somewhat bitterly cold. So, you know.
Crazy. I guess that's what we get for having summer in the winter.
Yeah. Let's talk a little about yourself. I mean, you have a very interesting background in terms of, you know, coming from a choir base. I know a lot of singers that have been part of choirs before, but your choir is, when you were part of the choirs early on, that you were actually touring around, correct?
Yeah, I was. It was really fun.
Yeah, I mean, what was it like for you? I mean, you know, Have you traveled? Was that, you know, the first opportunity to be able to travel across the world and to be able to see different cultures?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. I mean, I've traveled to Jamaica and like other islands just with my family. My family is from Jamaica, but being able to go to Europe and Romania and different places in Europe, that was a totally different experience for me. So I'm really grateful that I got a chance to do that with the choir. It gave me a lot of insight into the power of music. Like, you don't have to speak the same language, but they can feel what you're trying to bring across. And that really helped me to have an interest in reaching all different kinds of people and being inspired by different kinds of music as well.
Yeah, you know, what was probably one of your favorite places to go when you were, you know, with your family or with the choir? I mean, what was one of your favorite places to have visited?
I would say Romania was one of my favorites, just because I feel like we got to spend more time with the people than with some of the other trips that I had, and got to learn some of the language and the food, and the people were so sweet. They were really, really cool.
Yeah, you know, yeah, it's very interesting as well. I mean, what vocal range were you in choir?
I sang second soprano in choir.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And then I read that you did do some solos as a part of the choir. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, any favorite songs that you did with the choir that you were the soloist for?
Oh gosh, couple things. So like some random songs, like I remember Didn't My Lord Deliver Daniel. And they actually created like a little funny meme off of that. That was funny. And then, of course, your typical Messiahs, your Handles. And then there was a really fun Pirates of Penzance. That was a musical, but by Gilbert and Sullivan. And that was a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, you know, you do have that little bit of a theater background as well. I mean, you know, what was the, you know, Was it a passion of yours to be able to do musical theater?
I thought it was. I think in my college career, it was, I want to do music and I want to do it all. And from trying out different things, I was able to really narrow down and pinpoint what it is exactly I wanted to do within music. But it took time. So I'm really glad that I got to try a lot of different things so that I knew which one I loved the most.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, we're seeing some such diversity, and I was just talking to this to Shelley, the guest of White that came in right before you, about the idea that diversity has been huge, especially in show business as of late. You know, in the musical community, I think it's been expanded a little bit as well. I mean, we see something like Hamilton come out that's done an absolute great job of showing a bit of diversity. And then earlier on, I mean, Rent was a very diverse cast as well. And that was, I don't know, about 10 years ago or something like that. But it's been interesting to see that the diversity of what's been going on in the musical theater portion of it as well. We're seeing a lot more people with diversity, you know, play lead roles as well. I mean, what does that mean to you to be able to see that? That's still, you know, that's something that's opening up for a lot of people like yourself.
I am so grateful. I mean, it is always, I feel like it's every artist's dream to feel the public continue to be more open-minded so that people that are different, that don't fit in a box, that aren't what you expect, can actually be appreciated because sometimes people will assume, oh, well, you're a gospel singer. No, I'm not a gospel singer. Like, I don't have a gospel-y voice. I don't write gospel songs. I respect it, but that's not who I am. So every time that people can be more open-minded and appreciate difference and appreciate merging different styles together, I think we're all excited because, hey, now we get a chance to really stretch out and see how much we're capable of, regardless of the box that the music industry is in.
Yeah, you know, interesting is you say about, you know, the idea of definitely doing something different. I'm reminded of Ray Charles when he went over from doing from doing R&B over to country and more of a gospel country kind of situation. And they said it wouldn't work, and it ended up working very, very well for him as mm-hmm. well. I mean, now you're more the R&B side of things, and then being able to be able to bring in some of the gospel aspects, if not all, some of them over to your R&B side of things about that. Can you tell me a little bit about your style and how you describe it?
So I listen to all different kinds of music. It really depends on my mood. But sometimes I think I prefer fusions of music more than just straightforward. Like, even if I listen to jazz, it's going to have a rock flair. Or if I listen to R&B, it's going to have a hip hop with a touch of classical or something. I really enjoy fusions, and that really influences my music. I don't think there's any one song that kind of stays in its lane all by itself. It's always mixed with something else. R&B is definitely the core, but some songs have a rock flair, some songs have more of a jazz flair, more classical flair. It just depends on what I wanted to get across in that song.
What was the reason why you decided to kind of go onto a solo career like this versus maybe going the choir route or going with the musical theater? I mean, what was kind of the decision just to go on this direction?
Well, it was definitely a difficult decision. My choir directors and my vocal teacher, they will always tell me, you can do this. You can make money off of this. You know, why don't you just... But it wasn't the same. I enjoyed it, but here I am. I have all these songs that I've written, and there's no greater feeling than performing those songs that I've written. I mean, even when I do covers, yeah, that's fun. But when I get to share my music, there's just nothing like it. I guess you could say I got addicted to it a little bit, and I wouldn't suffice for anything else. So it was kind of a be 100% happy, follow your dreams, or feel like you're settling.
What instruments do you play?
I play piano mainly, but because I got my degree as a music educator, I had to learn to play every instrument. So I teach other instruments, but I wouldn't say you want to hear me play all of them. So piano and voice were my main instruments, even in college as well.
With that in mind, I mean, does that help out in terms of your songwriting? I mean, obviously, there's certain songs that'll just be piano, but other songs, you can add this or that or whatever. So does that help you out in terms of what you feel that the song should be if they have to add any instruments or how any instruments sound?
Oh, of course. I can't even imagine what it's like to be a singer and not be a musician. I could not imagine. I mean, first of all, the new single that just came out, my husband and I produced that on our own. So if I wasn't able to play what I hear in the keys or in the bass or in the synths or the fillers or whatever, I mean, I'm not even good at explaining what I hear anyway. Like, sometimes when I'm trying to convey, I'm like, I want the color blue, or it's got a build and give me a bang, and like, it makes no sense at all. So I'm really glad that I can do it on my own. It works out really great.
Was this the first time that you've done something in studio like this? I don't know if you did anything with your choirs earlier or anything else, but was this the first time you were able to go into a studio and to be able to produce something like this?
It was not. My first EP, I actually did with a studio, that wasn't self-produced. I had a team, and that was with Forge Recording, and it went great. It was cool and all, and it was still, like, my songs. It was my songs, but it wasn't exactly what I was hearing, so I felt like it would be scarier, but a lot more fun and a lot more fulfilling if I would just embark on doing it myself. So the new music that you will hear from now on is actually out of my house, like in my back room. My husband and I, we record and have a little mic back there. It's crazy because when you hear it, you wouldn't expect it, but just kind of worked out that way.
Really enough, funny story was just the fact that the first song that Weird Al ever produced was in a bathroom. He actually did record in a bathroom.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was a famous story about that. But You know, with the experience, you know, going through the process of being in studio and to be able to record something in a studio, did you learn a lot from that experience?
I did. I'm actually extremely grateful that I had that experience first. It helped me to figure out the proper processing for recording. I feel like if I didn't know any better, maybe I would like sing it straight through, or I would do this section and then that section. I don't think I would know what would be best to get the longevity out of my voice. So from that experience, now I know, okay, let me just do that phrase. If I don't like it, then I can do it. Think about that word. It taught me to be very, very specific about how to execute what I sing.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, just translating that over to the stage, I mean, is obviously there's got to be tweaks. And did you learn a lot in terms of, you know, having performed something live versus, you know, in studio, and then having to adjust after you do it in studio just because you recorded it differently than maybe what you originally planned to?
Yeah, of course. I mean, there's nothing like performing live. Absolutely nothing like it. So being able to feed off of that energy, it's more than just singing and listening. You're literally creating something together because you make them feel something and they respond. And then it's this communication of language, I mean, of music. It's this language of music that we create, and you cannot do that in the studio. It's not the same. You execute the same way, hoping that the listener receives it that way. But I'm personally fed by the audience. Having them there really helps to fuel my fire.
And obviously, you know, a smaller stage probably would be best for you, I think, but just by hearing what you were saying, you know, there is that intimacy in terms of being able to perform, you know, in a club versus maybe going to a stadium, as it were. But, I mean, you know, how has it been for the feedback in terms of, you know, being able to perform live? And, you know, obviously with social media being the way it is, I mean, have you been getting a lot of feedback in terms of the fans?
Yeah, I have, and I'm really appreciative. Like, they send me emails or, like, messages here and there just giving me encouragement, letting me know that you're on the right track, your music's appreciated, we see you working hard, it's paying off kind of thing. So that's huge for me. Every time a fan lets me know that they appreciate it and that it's a blessing, it gives me all the fuel that I need.
Yeah, you talked earlier about the idea of songwriting, and you had a bunch of songs that you had kept for quite a while. I mean, how long have you been songwriting? Do you have a lot of songs that you may have written maybe in your earlier years?
Yeah, a lot, actually. I wrote my first song when I was 11, and I've had journals filled ever since. So I think there's about 5-6 journals in my room just filled with songs. I mean, some of them, most of them were just therapeutic. Like, it just felt right. I just needed to do it. And not all of them will be recorded, but I mean, there's literally over 100 songs between those journals.
So you do go back, you know, sometimes to read certain things, and, you know, if you get, you know, something in mind in terms of a tune or something like that, you earmark it to possibly record.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Especially because some of them were recorded anyway, just to like help me get the idea. As a matter of fact, fun fact, If God Doesn't Want It, that was the new single that's out now. I first wrote that when I was 13. So that's a perfect example of, hey, you know what? That could actually be something. Revamped it, and here it is.
What was probably the quickest you've ever written a song?
That's funny. So it's hard to explain because with me being a firm believer, there's some songs that I say that I helped write with God, and then honestly, there's some songs that I didn't write at all. They just started coming, and I was like trying to write as fast as I can. As a matter of fact, Run off of my first EP, I remember how it happened, but I don't remember writing it. I remember hearing it in my head, going to the piano, writing everything down, and within 5 minutes, I was singing and playing the entire thing. So, I mean, I think that's the fastest that it's ever happened.
And I think that's the fastest any guest has ever said that they've done it. I think that the second quickest was 10 minutes. So,
okay.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, that's always an interesting question to ask people to see how fast that they've done as well. I was going to ask you about, so it's interesting to be able to see some of these things go kind of quick. I lost my question. It is interesting to say the least in terms of, I know what I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you about, you obviously probably get ideas just everywhere, wherever you are, traveling or whatever as well as that. I mean, always keep a notebook handy, or is it something that you keep on your iPhone? I know some people are keeping iPhones now to be able to maybe hum some lyrics or to write something down. But what's your kind of process in terms of that?
Yeah, I am with the rest of them. I use my iPhone now, and I say it like this because I'm so old school. I'm like, keep the books, get rid of the Kindles, everything old school. But I mean, I used to carry my journals around with me everywhere, and they would get rained on, the pages would tear, and it wasn't convenient. So I typically, if I'm out, I do record in my phone. Like if I hear a melody, I'll just record it, or I'll type the lyrics into my phone. And then once I get home, I try to copy them in my journal. It doesn't always work out that way, but at least it's saved somewhere between the two.
Now, do most of the time, does the lyrics come first or does the melody come first? Or is it a combination, kind of even 50-50?
Definitely an even combination. It depends on how I feel. Sometimes I feel like singing first. Sometimes I feel like playing first. So, it just depends what I'm trying to express in that moment, what I'm trying to get out. Sometimes I don't even get all the words. Sometimes I'll just get a really good hook and then I'll come back to it later. It's very sporadic. There's not a process for this at all.
Yeah, kind of organized chaos, as it were. Have you been performing as of late?
I have been. I actually, I'm really looking forward to, there's a radio show next Friday that I'll be performing on. And then another one the following Saturday, and then I will actually, featuring Young One, the one that rapped on my album, that's my husband, we'll be doing a concert in Maryland at the end of April. So we have some stuff lining up, and then the summer is going to be packed as well.
Yeah, are you just going to be touring the Northeast pretty much then?
That's what I have for now, but I'm looking to branch out, reaching out to Canada, reaching out anywhere I can, to be honest, because the more I perform, the more I can get my word out there. The more traveling, the better.
Yeah, our scene out here it's interesting to say the least. Not a hell of a lot of R&B. Once in a while we will, but I know that Southern California there's a huge R&B scene as well. So it'd be interesting to see you in that portion of the U.S. I think they'd go over very well. With the new single, are you planning to do a music video at all?
I am. I'm working on it right now. There's choreography and all this kind of stuff. So it's going to be great. I'm really excited about it.
Now, we know that your new album's coming out, I think, later this fall. I mean, obviously thinking about another single after this, or you're just kind of getting this one wrapped up with the video and then maybe deciding what the next single is going to be.
Nope, you read my mind. I got two more singles coming. One is done recording. We just have to tweak a little something and then get it mastered. And then the other one's in process. And then the full album. I mean, I think we should keep the momentum going. I definitely don't want anybody to sleep on me. Not now.
I think, it's great to be able to see that as well. I mean, and, like I said, it's great to be some of these artists. I mean, to be able to do it independent now, to be able to be an independent producer of your music, and to be able to do it the way that you want it to be. Back in the day, you couldn't do it that way. You had to be signed to a major label in order to really make any kind of progress in this world. But nowadays, we're just seeing so many people that are homegrown producers. Chance the Rapper comes to mind, where he just really was homegrown in terms of that as well. So, to see that you have that freedom to be able to sing your own voice and to be able to have your own opinion on how the music's going to be going as well. So it's great to be able to see that they're taking control of that in terms of that as well. So So any other things that you want to promote? Anything else coming up for you in the next couple months?
Well, there's plenty coming up. So in order for us to stay in tune, please make sure that you go to KristaDanae.com, KristaDanae. You can go there, subscribe to my mailing list. I send out a newsletter like once a month to let you know what's going on, so you can stay updated on all the behind-the-scenes looks, whether there's new merchandise or new song coming, just so you can stay in the loop. And then if you're not a mailing list person, or if you are, I hope you are anyway, please follow me on social media. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, wherever there's social media, you'll find me at the same name, KristaDanae.
Krista, absolute pleasure to have you on the show, and best of luck with the singles and coming up as well, and we'll hopefully talk to you soon.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
No problem at all, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Take care.
Yep, bye. Krista Deanna, everybody, you guys check her out on all of her social media websites as well. Her new single, God Doesn't Want, is currently up, I'm sure, on Amazon and all your Amazon, iTunes, and all the places where you can get songs. So make sure you guys check that out as well. Don't know who's going to be on next week. I'll let you guys know in the next couple of days, as per usual. Please check out our Twitter, at SWIV. That's at SWIV. Somewhere in Vegas on Facebook as well. Usually when I post up a scheduled show, they post up on there. I'll double check on that, though, for guys. But if you want to check out some of our old episodes, you guys can go to blogtalkradio.com/somewhereinvegas. You guys can also subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, anywhere that you get podcasts, you'll be able to hear this podcast as well. We will be back next week. I know we were half an hour late this week. It's because of scheduling conflicts with Christina. She had to be at 3 o'clock, so we had to push a little bit. Next week we should be back at regular time, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. I'll have an announcement about who's going to be on next week, hopefully within a day or so. But, please join us then. I think besides that, we'll be back next week. It's been great to be able to have a couple shows kind of coming rolling as we go. So we'll talk to you guys next week here on Somewhere in Vegas, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on Mondays. We'll talk to you guys then.